Simple words on a page with pictures beside. This is all I have, this humble book. But oh, what words, what pictures, what a book. I am PJ Lynch, Laureate Nanogue of Ireland, and you're listening to Night Night Northwest.
Hello and welcome to everyone here and to all our listeners at home. Today we are recording from Milford Community Library. This is the 13th episode of Night Night Northwest. Over the course of this radio series, we will bring you 14 unique programmes, all based on Irish children's literature. You will hear stories about a snobby cat, a dreaming tree, a little bear who just can't sleep, and Daddy Nut Brown Hair who says, "Guess how much I love you." We are delighted to be joined today by fourth class from Scolwira, Milford. I'll be reading from a wonderful book called The Secret of Kells, written by Ethna Macy and illustrated by the cartoon Saloon. Hi.
How are you?
You're all very welcome. Are you ready for a story? Has anyone seen this book before? No? Or have you heard of the movie, no? No? What's it called? You tell me, Gemma.
The Secret of Kells.
What do you think it might be about? Has anyone got an idea? Yes, Alan.
A secret of, like, a place.
A place? That's a great answer, yeah. Anyone else? The Secret of Kells. Has anyone heard of the Book of Kells? Yeah? Yeah? Flynn, you've heard of the Book of Kells?
Well, I've saw it and I've heard of it, but I haven't read it yet.
No, it'd be a big read. It's a very old book. So I'm going to read part of this book, but then what I want you guys to do is go to the library and take it out. Yeah? Okay, is everyone ready? Chapter 4, Aisling. The pack closed in tighter as Brendan tried to back away, but now he could go no further because his back was against the rock. Pancor leapt onto it and Brendan picked up a stick to defend himself, waving it madly, but it flew from his hands. His action seemed to make the wolves angrier. Brendan climbed frantically onto the stone, scratching his arms and legs as he did so, and leaving a piece of his cloak behind him in the snapping jaws of one of the pursuers. The red eyes of the wolves looked even more excited at the sight and smell of blood. Suddenly there was a high, piercing howl that seemed to shake the trees all around the clearing. The wolves stopped in their tracks, raising their heads. The sound seemed to be coming from behind the pack. And when Brendan looked over, he saw the figure of what seemed to be another wolf outlined against the tree. It was much bigger than any of the pack that had attacked Brendan. It also seemed to be white, snow white. The wolves began to shake. Then they began to whimper like puppies. Within seconds, every last one of them had taken to their heels, racing in all directions, as if something had frightened the life out of them. Brendan caught a glimpse of bright green eyes and sharp, shining teeth. He lowered his head and put his hands together. There was nothing he could do now but pray. Someone was speaking. "Is that your cat?" It was a girl's voice, a young voice, and it sounded seriously annoyed. Brendan opened his eyes, and in front of him, instead of a wolf, was a child. Pancor was in her arms and did not look too happy about it. Brendan stared at the girl, too surprised to answer her. Instead, he tumbled down behind the stone, grabbing a twig he found there and waved it in the air, saying, "I've heard about creatures like you. You're a fairy." The girl gave a snort and demanded, "What are you doing in my forest? You've come to spoil it, haven't you?" Brendan came out from behind the stone and stared at the girl. She was smaller and slighter than he was. Her hair was so long it swept the ground. It was the colour of snow. The girl had bright green eyes, which were now slits of angry fire. She did not look at all pleased to see him. Still stunned with shock, Brendan asked, "What happened to the white wolf? Where did it go?" "Nobody's here but me," said the girl, "and your cat." Pancor regarded the girl quietly, then went to Brendan and rubbed against him. The girl asked, "What are you doing here? You were probably sent here by your family to get food, weren't you?" Mist swirling around the clearing, the fairy-like figure jumped on top of the stone. Brendan thought he had never seen anyone able to jump like that and continued, "Well, you can go right back to where you came from. If you don't, I'll make the wolves get you." You have no right to come here disturbing the animals and the birds. I didn't mean to, said Brandon, his nerves in tatters from the way the girl kept jumping around the clearing, disappearing into the mist and then reappearing again. Look, I'm sorry, right? I'm not here to get food for my family. I'm here to get things to make ink. And I don't have a family. And we have food in Kells. So I wouldn't come here for it anyway. I was just a bit lost and... The girl who had been walking away from him with her nose in the air suddenly stopped. You don't have a family? Her face seemed to soften a little. No mother. Brendan shook his head. She said quietly, I am alone too. And then she disappeared into the trees. Brendan ran after her, saying breathlessly, But my uncle looks after me. He's the abbot of the monastery of Kells. And me and this other monk. His name is Aidan. We want to make a book. You see, and I needed to get berries to make ink. Berries like this. He opened his hand and showed the girl the berries Aidan had given him. What's ink? Asked the girl. It's hard to explain. It's like liquid colour, and you put it on pages. You would have to see it. But I have to get the berries. Well, you can't. You must leave. Brendan's mouth set into a stubborn line. I'm not leaving the forest until I get what I came for. I won't do any harm, I promise you. It won't hurt your old trees just to take a few berries. It's really important. The book we will make is so beautiful. We just need the berries to do it. The girl seemed to consider for a few moments and then said, Oh, all right then, I'll help you get the berries. If I don't help, you will probably spend ages rummaging through the forest and annoying the trees and unsettling everyone. But if I help you, you must promise me one thing. What is it? Asked Brendan. He was a little bit afraid of this girl. He was sure she was one of the magical creatures he had been warned against. If she was magic, who knows what she might ask him? He had heard stories about the bargains magical beings made with humans. They never worked out well for the humans. I don't want you or your cat to come into my forest again. I don't want to see either of you here. You must promise me that you will never come back. Brendan didn't want to make the promise, and by the look on Pankhur's face, she didn't want to either. But they really didn't have a choice if they wanted to get the berries for Aidan. So reluctantly, Brendan nodded. Then he said, My name is Brendan. What's yours? But the girl just laughed and started to lead the way through the trees. Where there had just been grass before, there was now a carpet of snowdrops. The sun had come out again and they seemed to be following a path through the light. The girl was definitely magic, thought Brendan. Otherwise, how could she dart ahead so quickly? Sometimes she leapt halfway up the trunk of a tree as if she had wings. Sometimes she glided along their upper branches like a squirrel. He would catch sight of her face looking down on him through a cradle of branches, laughing at his frightened expression. This is one of my favorite times in the forest, she said. It's still very quiet. Like it is in the winter, but everything is starting to grow and to come to life again. I'll ask the forest where your berries are. As they made their way through the woods, she showed him many things that he had not noticed when he had been on his own. Walking with her was like having another pair of eyes. Eyes that could see all the things that it was so easy to miss. Two beetles greeting each other on the stem of a fern. A nest of field mice snuggled in the bough of a beech tree. The hole in the earth where a badger lived. Finally, they came to a great tree, which seemed to stretch up high beyond all the others. Brendan could not even see the top. This is an oak. It's the oldest and tallest tree in the forest, and it has special powers. She picked up a leaf that had fallen to the ground the autumn before. See? Look, it has curly edges, and the berries you were looking for are growing on the tree. Though they are not really berries, they are just things that grow on the oak. She stopped and looked at Brendan's face. The berries, as you call them, are up at the top, she said. It's a big tree. You have climbed a tree before, haven't you? Brendan paused. This girl was smaller and younger than he was, and the thought of climbing the tree didn't seem to bother her at all. How hard could it be, he thought. So he said, Yeah, of course, it's easy. He soon discovered it was not as easy at all. In fact, climbing the huge oak was one of the most difficult things he had ever tried to do. Twigs and branches scraped his arms and legs and poked him in his eyes. His feet slid on the wet bark, unable to get a foothold. The one branch that he wanted to catch in order to go higher always seemed just a little beyond his reach. And the further up he climbed, the further there was to fall. The girl, on the other hand, scampered up the tree with the ease of a squirrel. Now she was really starting to irritate him. Why did she have to go so fast? He tried to climb more quickly so that he could catch up with her and found himself sliding and stepping onto thin air. He was falling down through the branches, and just when he thought his heart was going to stop, he managed to catch hold of a branch which he clung onto for dear life. He looked up to where the girl was peering down at him through the leaves. She jumped easily onto the branch he was clinging to and pulled him up to safety. "You're useless at this," she said crossly. "I thought you said you knew how to climb trees." "I do," he said, "smaller ones." "Yeah," said the girl, "like bushes." At last, they reached the top of the tree. As the girl had said, the oak was the tallest tree in the forest. When he looked down, Brendan thought the ground was rushing up to meet him. His stomach turned over and he was sure he was going to be sick. Once again, he could feel his legs going, his body lurching towards the ground below, and the girl had to push him back against the trunk of the tree. "Don't look down," she said. Holding his arm tightly, Brendan shut his eyes and tried to breathe. After a moment, the girl said, "Come on, Brendan, open your eyes now." He shook his head grimly and kept them shut. "Come on," she said again, "open your eyes and I'll tell you my name." Brendan opened his eyes. "It's Aisling," the girl said, "and this is my forest." He looked down. He could see far into the distance in every direction. Away to the west, he could see the encircling walls of Kells with the great stone round tower rising in the centre. Inside the walls, he could make out the tiny figures of the monks scuttling around as they worked. It reminded him of an anthill he had once disturbed. But the monastery was only a small break in the greenness that surrounded him on all sides. "Have you ever been over there?" Brendan pointed towards the monastery. "That's Kells. That's where I live." Aisling shook her head. "Never. I never leave my forest. I stay in the trees and I never go inside walls. This is my place. And you had better be getting back to yours. Look, the sun is already going down." She jumped down to a slightly lower branch and Brendan followed, much more slowly and cautiously. He suddenly noticed that there was a nest of wasps on the branch and pulled back, afraid he would be stung. "They won't sting you," said Aisling. "I asked them not to." What do you think so far?
I think the book was good so far. And see the way he said that there was a white wolf.
Uh-huh.
I think that the girl was the wolf, but she changed into a girl then.
Do you know what? I was sort of thinking that. Did anyone else think that? Yeah, lots of hands up. That the girl might be the white wolf. Shay?
I think the story's very exciting, like, because it's, like, shocking, like, how, like, she can tell, like, the bees not to do this and the wolves to go away.
Yeah.
And not harm anyone.
Yes, Dan?
I like the book now because it's, like, sort of mysterious if you think about it. And and the other thing is, I never heard of the book before and I'm already liking it, so I think that's a good thing.
So where did we leave off, do you remember? "They won't sting you," said Aisling. "I asked them not to." That's where we left off. We start again, are we all ready? Is everyone comfortable? The bees flew away and there in a cluster were the little brown berries that Aidan had shown him. It was hard to believe, thought Brendan, as he started to gather them and fill his satchel, that they could make the lovely green ink he had seen on the pages of the book. Aisling picked one and grimaced. "They look like wild boar droppings," she said. "And they're really stinky," added Brendan. When he had finished gathering the berries, they scrambled down the tree, Brendan falling the last bit and feeling really embarrassed by his clumsiness in front of the girl. But she just laughed. To his surprise, Brendan discovered that he did not really mind her laughing at him anymore. "Now I will lead you back," Aisling said. "We had better go the short way, but be sure to stick with me. There are dangerous things along the way." She led the way along a different route back through the forest. This path was more difficult to follow. The trees grew more closely together and let in less light. Brendan and Pancor stayed close to the girl, who found a way as if it was the easiest thing in the world to make a track through the trees. After a while, they came to a clearing. It was a strange place. Although there were no trees, there seemed to be even less light here than there had been among the thickets. On one side of the clearing, there was a wall of black rocks. Brendan stopped, fascinated by the sight of two great stone figures on either side of a dark opening in the rock. Pancor meowed loudly. Aisling, who had run ahead, looked back. "Come away, Brendan," she said in a voice that suddenly sounded full of fear. "Come away from this place. This is a place of suffering." "Suffering," said Brendan. "What do you mean?" "Just come away," Aisling whispered. "It's too dangerous." Brendan laughed. Now he felt that he was the brave one. Surely it couldn't be more dangerous than climbing that oak tree. Aisling grabbed him and tried to pull him back. "It's the cave of the Dark One, of Crom Cruach." "The Dark One," said Brendan. "Crom Cruach? But my uncle told me about the Crom worshippers. Crom Cruach is only pagan nonsense and a story, an imaginary thing. My uncle says that you shouldn't be afraid of imaginary things." Aisling gave a deep sigh. "Brendan," she said, "you mustn't say its name too loud. It might hear you. It's waiting in the darkness, waiting for someone to wake it. Brendan, listen to me. You must come away now." Chapter 5. The Creature in the Darkness. But Brendan had moved closer to the entrance to the dark place. The two stone guardians stared at him out of blind eyes. They were roughly carved, but he could see that they were human figures. Their faces, crude as they were, still managed to look cruel. Brendan began to feel that their lips were moving, whispering something, calling him. Brendan could sense something pulling him towards the blackness. Nearer and nearer he went, fascinated by the draw of the dark. Then he heard it. There was a sound coming from the entrance. It was like something large and heavy shifting in the darkness. An animal, perhaps. If so, it would have to be a creature even bigger than the elephant's brother, Asua, had told him about. No, now there was a different sound, not like an animal. A slithering and a heavy sliding. As it grew louder, Brendan found something very strange was happening to him. His feet bringing him closer to the cave, while his mind screamed at him to get out of that place as fast as he could. Aisling was crying now, still calling out to Brendan to come away. When he glanced at her, though, he could hardly pull his eyes away from the entrance. Her face had changed. It was no longer that of a girl, but of an old, old woman, wrinkled with pain and fear. But even this sight could not make him turn from the cave's entrance, nor could the fact that Pancor had her teeth dug into his sleeve and was frantically trying to pull him away pitifully. The slithering noise continued. His heart thumped in his chest. Brendan realized that there was something awake down there. He had woken the thing that lived down in the darkness, and it was coming for him. Now he was afraid, really, really afraid. He tried to turn and run, but terror overcame him and he could not move. The sense of the blackness coming from the cave was growing stronger and stronger, and a wind was coming from the entrance, a wind that sucked him towards the cave, that was pulling him in despite himself. Brendan realized that he was trapped, caught by the evil thing. He could do nothing but wait until he came face to face with the horror, and he knew, without a shadow of a doubt, that the one purpose that horror lived for was to destroy and to kill, to cause pain and sorrow and suffering. Something bright came between him and the dark wind. Aisling had come to help. With all her strength, she was pushing one of the stone statues across the entrance to the cave. How could she do it? She was so small, thought Brendan. How could she possibly shift one of those great stone creatures? But she did. With a cry like a scream, the stone fell to the earth, blocking the entrance, so that whatever it was that lived down there could not come out. The spell was broken. The wind stopped, and Brendan found he could move again. He rushed over to Aisling, laying panting on the ground. Pancor curled herself around the girl's neck, trying to warm her. Aisling's face was as white as her hair. Her eyes were closed, and her lips looked blue, as if the blood had stopped in her body. Brendan wondered if the strain of pushing over the statue had killed her. He said frantically, "Aisling, Aisling, wake up, are you hurt?" For a moment, nothing happened, but then Aisling shook her head. She slowly opened her eyes and Brendan said, "What was that?" "I told you," said Aisling, and her face was like an old woman's, Crom Cruach. They moved quickly from the clearing, and as soon as they did, Aisling began to recover. "That's the third time today I've saved your life," she said. "I hope you're grateful. We had better go as fast as we can. If we don't hurry up, you'll be in big trouble with that uncle of yours." As they walked through a forest, lit by the red glow of the evening sun, Brendan asked, "What happened just now? Who is Crum Crook?" Aisling shuddered. "I don't like to even mention his name. It poisons the air of the forest. But you had better known. You have to realise how dangerous he is, just in case you think of doing something stupid, like going back into that clearing." She paused and took a deep breath. "Crum Crook is one of the old dark ones," she said, whispering as if she did not want the forest to hear what she was saying. "He has many different names and many different lairs. Some people call him Crum Duv, the black one. Others say that his name means bloody head. There are those who think that it means bloody mound. He has existed since the beginning of time. Through the ages, he has ruled by fear, and he has taken many different shapes, many forms. One of the shapes he takes is that of a huge snake, a serpent, they say, with only one eye. There are some people who worship him out of fear. He has many ways in and out of the upper world. Sometimes he is not seen for years. But you heard something, didn't you?" Brendan nodded, a kind of slithering noise. Aisling closed her eyes for a moment. "I think he is awake," she said, her voice faint. "I do hope I'm wrong." "Oh, look," she continued, sounding relieved to change the subject. "We're nearly there. Can you see the walls of Kells? We will just about reach it before the sun goes down completely." They followed the wall to the secret entrance where Brendan had crept out that morning. It felt like a very long time ago to him, much longer than a day. Now it was time to leave Aisling. Brendan discovered he didn't want to go. Pancur was already caught up in her arms. Brendan said, "I suppose you don't want to come in and see where I live." Aisling laughed. "I do not want to go behind those walls," she said. "I told you. I belong to my forest, but you know that. I've changed my mind about something. You can visit the forest again if you like, and Pancor can come too." "But how will I find you?" asked Brendan. "Don't worry. I will find you," said Aisling. "Nothing happens in the forest without me knowing about it." They smiled at each other, and Brendan and Pancor pushed their way through the gap into the enclosure. I like that story. So that was only a part in the middle. Did you like it, Dan?
Yeah, I loved it. It was one of the best stories I've ever heard.
That's amazing. You'll have to definitely get the book and read it.
Yeah.
Finnan, you have your hand up at the back.
I read my Hon and Henry. My book's called Hon and Henry.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I couldn't hear you, Finn. Horrid Henry. You like Horrid Henry?
He's the Hon boy.
Horrid Henry and his brother is called?
Peter.
Perfect, Peter. Is Horrid Henry bold, Finnan?
Bold.
Or is he funny? He's funny and bold. Did you like that story that I just read, The Secret of Kells?
Yes.
Good, good man yourself. Flynn?
Yeah, the same as Gavin. I'm really enjoying the story as well.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted. I'm delighted you're all enjoying the story today. It's nice to have a story read to you, isn't it? Can anyone guess what's going to happen? Because look, we only read part of chapter 5, and there are, let's see how many chapters there are. 15. There's a lot more to find out about the Secret of Kells, isn't there? Darren.
I think they're going to need more berries, and then the snake's going to be waiting for them to get the berries. And then he's gonna bite them.
Oh, they're gonna get big snake bites. They might. Yes, Tori.
Crum Crook might try to steal the Book of Kells, but then Brendan takes it back.
The book might get stolen. Oh, that's a great answer. Flynn, you have your hand up.
I think what's gonna happen next? I think the boy's gonna go back to the forest and. He's going to go into the monster's cave thingy and they're going to have a battle.
A big battle. Do you know what? We could have a little sneaky preview, couldn't we? So that chapter was called The Creature in the Darkness. Then the next chapter is called The Eye of Colum Kill. So that'll make you think what that's about. Then the next one's called The Rescue. Who's going to get rescued? Oh, you know what, guys? Chapter 8, do you know what it's called? Crom Crook. And then the next one is called The Eye of the Crom. You have to get this book out.
Simple words on a page with pictures beside. This is all I have, this humble book. But oh, what words, what pictures, what a book. I am PJ Lynch, Laureate Nanogue of Ireland, and you're listening to Night Night Northwest.
That's it from this episode of the series. I'd like to thank the children from Skulmuira, Milford. Please join us next week for the last in this current series, when we will be broadcasting from the Central Library, Letterkenny. And we will be joined by the pupils from St. Patrick's National School, Lurgy Brack. So until next week...
The Secret of Kells, read by Alison Toomey, written by Etna Massey and illustrated by Cartoon Saloon. First published in 2009 by the O'Brien Press.
Night Night Northwest Series 2 was written, produced, directed and presented by Alison Toomey, with sound recordist Mary Harkin and editor Orla Malone. A Real Films production, funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee, along with the Donegal County Council Library Service and Creative Ireland.